Sister Simone Campbell. Sister Simone Campbell served as the executive director of Network Catholic Social Justice Lobby when she gave this keynote address at the Ignatian Family Teach-In for Justice in 2012, which had the theme Imagination Reform, Moving Beyond the Margins.
I'm deeply honored and privileged to be here to share my life stories, and I'm deeply honored especially to speak after our wonderful sister, the nuns on the bus. So I'm really a big fan of the nuns on the bus.
Always my
heart. And I'm always grateful when I see young, active-minded people went to make our world a better place. But I will best go into share a little bit about my life stories, and then I will show some one clip of the work that I'm doing in the village. But some of you probably might see the mountain, and some of you might be asking, what is the picture of mountain doing here in the room? When I was 10 years old, my mom and my dad challenged my imagination. They told me that I could move the mountain Kilimanjaro. And I did not even understand. I asked them, how could I move a mountain? So they told me, if I have hope, if I have faith, and if I make good decisions in my life, then they believed that I could move mountain Kilimanjaro. But they did not put it in the context that a 10-year-old boy would understand. So I thought they were really crazy parents. Yeah, because I didn't know that a human being could move a mountain. Well, where my parents right? I don't know, I'm reminding the story, what that mountain meant. They were really crazy. They told me that my life is made up of the 10% that I do not control, and that I control 90% of my life. And I would like you to imagine when you were 10 years old, or if you are a parent here and you have a 10-year-old child, put yourself or put the heads of a 10-year-old and little be imagining with me throughout this story. And because of the title of our theme this year, I will be mounted would be equivalent to the magic that are affecting us. So let me walk you through. So I did not understand how my life could be quantified into two, but later on in the story, they told they would prove me wrong. You see, this is a very basic life as of 1987. There is no running water, there is no electricity, there is no cell phone, so therefore you cannot text message or Skype, but life was good. My mom used to tell me that I'm happy because I should be happy because I'm blessed with family, and he or she who is blessed with family and community is the most wealthier person. So before Civil War, I was really very wealthy, wealthy person. Sudan has been at war for a long time, and probably some of you might have read last year, Southern Sudan became an independent country. So, and personally, I believe these are the three why there is war in Sudan. So probably I will not go into the details because I have a session tomorrow that I will definitely go in detail. But as I say, my parents were wealthy, but they were wealthy in terms of cars. Nine siblings plus me, we are all nine, and I'm between the four on this side. And in our culture, there is nothing more important than cars. And it takes the courage for your parent to trust you with their bank account. Because in our culture, the more cars you have, the more wealthy you are. So at age of 10, my parent trusted me to look after their cars, which is the wealth of our family. And it would be equivalent here for any one of you here. If your parent trusts you to look after their bank account, they're really good parents and they have trust in you. So what I used to do at the age of 10, part of my accounting job was to take the cows to the grazing field. And every morning I would take the cows, and then in the evening I would come back. But when that day in 1987, I got attacked in the grazing field at about 3 p.m. My cows were grazing, and suddenly I heard the sound of a gun. So I was surprised from where I was. I got up and I saw four militiamen from Northern Sudan. They carrying guns. So what I did, I ducked down and covered myself with the grass so that they could not see me. probably they would have killed me or kidnapped me. After a couple of minutes, I saw them taking my cows to Northern Sudan. And at that point, after they went some distance, I got up and I ran home. I ran home to inform my family about the incident. And before I went home, I saw a huge smoke of fire coming out of the village. The people were being slaughtered in the village. I ran for a couple of minutes, and as I was nearing the village, two men who were running away from the village stopped me on the way, and they said, "Gabriel, do not go to the village." But I was so anxious, and I felt that I need to go to the village. So I didn't listen to them. I kept running, and one of the men ran after me and grabbed hold of me on my back, and then he put me on his shoulder, and then he turned around and ran. He was very compassionate, he was very caring. He didn't want me to go in the village and be killed. But at some point, he was shot dead on the back, and I found myself on the ground. The militiamen kept firing at me, and I tried to roll over. And at some point, I had to play dead. I closed my eyes, I held my breath, pretending that I was a dead child. That's how I could survive. I got up, I saw the dead man in front of me, but I made it into the village. And when I went, nobody was there. I lost hope of finding my family, and at that point, fear gripped me, and I ran into the forest, where I had to climb up the tree at night, because I was nearly beaten by a lion. So I made up my mind and climbed the tree. Spent the whole night. It was a very gloomy and sleepless night I will never forget. But I didn't sleep, I was careful throughout the night. In the morning, a group of people came. They were running away from their villages. They were not my relatives or some of my family. I didn't know any one of them. But they sat up under the tree and they began to share their life stories. And at that point, I called out for help. So they called me down from the tree. They gave me some roasted beef and water, and they told me to come. So we ran for 2 months. Barefooted, not enough food. So whenever we did not find food, we had leaves from the tree in order to survive. And we came on now. At this point of journey, I was so hopeless. I was so much consumed by hopelessness. I was so depressed, and I totally gave up. But I was able to remember that had my parents been with me in this journey, they would have challenged me. That the mountain they talk about was the obstacles, that all of us have mountains in our life. And there are so many mountains. So at that point, I decided to have hope and try to survive. I crossed the Nile, but not everybody made it. Some were eaten by a crocodile, but thank God I did survive. I had to run for a couple of months or for a couple of weeks in the desert, whereby I saw a lot of people dying. And what kept me going was really the hope. The more I was giving up, the more I recall and challenge myself that this is another mountain that my parents would have challenged me to move. I came to, I arrived, and I was nearly half dead after 4 months of walking. And at that point, along the way, I was bitten by a snake. And when I came to the camp, the snake bite took toll on me. I could not move, on my right leg. And at that point, I lost hope. I was so depressed. I was so angry. I was so bitter. And one night, while I went to bed, thinking that I would die at that night, my parents appeared in the dream. My dad scolded me that I was so consumed by hopelessness that I was going to die. My mom told me that because I was so negative that I was going to die. But if I could be hopeful, if I could have faith in myself, that I could overcome what I was going through. And they exactly put into the picture of the 10 and the 90%. They told me that I control 90% of my life. Because 90% is about attitude, 90% is about believing in yourself, about your faith, and about hope. In the dream, they say they love me more than I will ever know. And they want me to come back home. They kissed me goodbye, and then they disappeared in my dream. You know what happened? I found myself on the floor because I fell off the bed, and I opened my eyes. I was so disappointed, but that dream changed my life. Every time I have a problem, I sit down and see, is it a part of the 90% that I could overcome and walk through, Or is it a part of the 10% that I could not overcome and therefore I don't need to dwell in? And this is really what kept me going every day. Because of civil war in Ethiopia in 1991, we had to run away because our refugee camp was attacked. Several people died, and we came to another refugee camp in Kenya where I began my school. And life, refugee life, is not really that great. You either eat one day, one meal a day, and sometimes you go without eating. But I was determined to go to the school, and that's where I discovered that literacy, education is power. So I continued to go to school there, and then thanks to you, the American people who opened the door and gave us the opportunity. In 1999, U.S. government approached us in the refugee camp, and they said that 4,000 were going to come here. So I was one of the lucky few that made it here in the U.S. I came to Syracuse, New York through sponsorship of Catholic Charities, and the Lost Boys and Lost Girls of Sudan believe that education is our mother and our father. I walk about 15 miles. It would be about walking from Syracuse to Atlanta or walking from Syracuse to Florida and make sure that no McDonald's on the way. So it was very, very tough. When I came here, I never seen snow in Africa. I thought snow was super on the ground. And I said, I thought that American people really loved me to the extent that they welcomed me with huge amount of sugar on the ground. And then when I came, 2 days, imagine, 2 days. 2 days after I had been here, one of good caring Americans who was working, volunteering for us, took me to Subway, you know Subway? And I fell in love with chicken teriyaki. especially with sweet onion sauce. But what was so global about it was, I was asked, what kind of cheese do I need on my chicken teriyaki? And I was given multiple choice, either American cheese, Swiss or Italian cheese. So I told them I need an African cheese. So I think all of you are all very intelligent. You are in the best university in the U.S. So I think you need to invent something to name it African cheese. So that's someone like you. And then I came here at 21 years. I was 21 years old. I did not graduate from high school. So I did my PhD and I was going to community college. I was working full time because I was supported by Catholic Relief Service, by Catholic Charities for 4 months. And then after 4 months, I was on my own. So sometimes I miss bus where I work, and I walk 2 hours and 40 minutes to come to downtown Syracuse. So at that point, I worked hard for 6 months and I bought a car. But I could not pass. I did not pass. I failed my road test 3 times. It was really bad. But I was able to remember what my parents taught me. They told me that when I'm failing, when I'm not succeeding, the best thing I need to do is to stop blaming others. Stop blaming your parents, or stop blaming your professor or your teachers. And my parents would say that best look deep inside you and see yourself as a part of the problem. And then when I identify myself as a part of the problem, I should try to make sacrifices. So in this case, when I came, I fell in love with watching American Idol. And I decided that I'm not going to watch American Idol until I pass my road test. And then I was even dancing with the star. I love dancing. And I did. So it gave me the motivation. This is how we have several psychologists major here. So my mind worked this way. You psychologists, people here. My mind worked in this way. When I love something so much, and if there's anything that I'm failing, if I give up something I love so much, it will give me the motivation to get that job done quickly so that I go back to do what I love. So after giving up watching American Idol, Dancing with the Star, I went back and I passed my road test. I was really so happy. So the point I'm trying to put across here is, in life, you may not be running away from the line. You may not give up watching American Idol. But believe me that you may have obstacles, or there might be margins in your life that you need to stop and reflect deep in your life or in your classes. If you're struggling in your class, you need to stop. See yourself as a part of why you are not doing well in the class. And then make sacrifice, and believe me, you will survive. Yeah, this is what I want you to learn from this, that after I sat down, why did I survive? It go back to my parents. Heavy hope is something important. And positive attitude. My mom would used to say that when I have a positive attitude, it will give me the resiliency to survive. So I hopefully you can take some of the lessons that I have learned from here. And all of you here, we are here because of the American dream. Your parents are sacrificing so much so that you can have good education, and that is why they have decided to bring you to Catholic institution, because they believe you'll get the wisdom you need, and then with the wisdom you will use to move the mountains in your life. Have I ever gone back? Yeah, I went back in 2007, shortly. One day after I graduated from Lemoyne, I decided to go back because there were some questions by 2007 that I were not able to answer about my own family. So that question took me back. And when I went, you see me, the whole village, my relatives welcoming me. The only thing I will regret for the rest of my life about the life I have gone through is the fact that my parents did not survive. They died during the war, and siblings were killed during the war. But I was able to reunite with two brothers and two brothers and some uncle. So now I feel as if I'm a complete human being. I'm happy because I know what happened to my family. I have now siblings. But when I went, the village, when I left, there was no school. So they founded the schools in 2000, shortly after the peace agreement was signed. And the kids would go to schools under the tree. And when I went, the children looked me in my eyes and asked me, is there a way that I could help them build a school? Because this was the school under the tree. During the rainy season, they would go home. And I came back here in 2007. I talked to my wonderful friends. I think one of my best friends, Beth, is here from Lemoyne. I talked to her about helping me to build the schools. So I talked to my professors, and my idea was to start selling T-shirts. And one of my professors was joking. I went to him and told him that, can you borrow the money so that I could buy 200 T-shirts, and then I would sell 200 T-shirts and build the school. And he was joking that nowhere in the world have anybody built the school with the T-shirt. So I will show you 3 minutes of the clip, and then I will conclude. There is anything I learned from this is really the collaboration. Starting from Lemoyne College, I've been to several Jesuit schools like Boston College. I've been very, 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 very supportive. But to close my remarks, I'm really grateful that I get this opportunity. But I challenge each one of you that if, as my parents has challenged me, that when you have hope and when you have faith, there's nothing that you cannot move. But when we unite our action, because personally I believe that there is no social justice without social action. And when we put our social action together, we can promote a more just world. Our hope is in our unity and our strength in each other. Thank you so much.